Well, we'll call the Energy Finance and Policy Division meeting to order. We don't have a quorum yet, but as soon as we do, we will call it officially to order. In the meantime, Representative Kalin, if you want to give us a little view of where we stand with House File 1221 at this point, we'd appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and committee members and public. Good afternoon. What we have before us is House File 1221, which is, I understand, going to be the vehicle for the energy efficiency bill this year. And what we have in front of us is a version that will suffer the delete all amendments glory, and there has been a draft that's being prepared, finished by the revisor's office, that I understand will be delivered to us about 3:30. So that'll be distributed to members and to our utility partners and stakeholders. And so the delete all amendments, the bill that we will take up on Wednesday formally, has been the result of many, many months of painstaking stakeholder conversations between the department, our utility energy efficiency allies and partners, and members of this committee, and I believe the Senate committee as well. As we know, there have been a lot of discussions about where we want to go with our energy conservation, energy efficiency, energy savings plans in Minnesota. Today, I think it's best to focus our attention on where we are today. So we have a thorough common ground of understanding of the Conservation Improvement Program and the efforts across the state historically and where we are today again to save energy. And so I ask that that members and our testifiers really focus on the background, on setting that foundation of where we are today, and talk about the content of the bill. Save that for Wednesday. I just want to say a thank you to everybody who has put in a lot of hours, and I'm sure we'll put in more hours between now and Wednesday and beyond. Staff, specifically Mr. Eliff and his counterpart in the Senate, and Ms. Bruzman from the department, and Commissioner Garvey, and of course all of our utility allies and partners. It's been a pleasure to work with you, and it continues to be a pleasure as we move forward, and just in the spirit of being straightforward and being able to share your feedback, I invite any questions and comments to be my door is open between now and Wednesday, and especially to members of this committee. I sent out an email as well expressing that. So that said, again, the focus today is really on where we are today with the Conservation Improvement Program, and really look forward to hearing the broad array of approaches that are succeeding and the challenges that we're facing today with the SIP program.
Thank you, Representative Kalin. Before we proceed, we do have a quorum present only 15 minutes after our regular starting time, so I'll call the meeting officially to order, and Representative Ruud moves approval of the minutes from whenever that was, March 2nd. Are there any corrections or additions? Seeing none, all those in favor of approval of the minutes, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Minutes are approved. Representative Kalin, you. Do you have any further comments, or should we go to testifiers?
I believe we should probably maximize the expertise in the room and hear from our testifiers today.
Very well. Mr. Garvey or Ms. Bruce? or both.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Edward Garvey. I'm Deputy Commissioner for the Minnesota Department of Commerce for Energy and Telecommunications. Because of that title, I do oversee the state's conservation improvement program, about which I'll give an overview of. But I just want to make sure we're clear. Christy Brusen is the manager of that, and she'll be responsible for handling all of your hard questions. Before I go into my presentation, I just want to say I've handed out three documents. The first is the slide that I'll be walking through. Another is the summary sheets from an audit that the Office of Legislative Auditors did of the SIP program in January. Actually, they did it in 05, in 04, with the publication in January 05. I think the most significant component to this is that its first major finding, and I'll read that to the committee. The benefits of the Conservation Improvement Program are greater than its costs, and the program has the potential to provide cost-effective energy conservation in the future. In that one sentence, what it sort of says is that our energy efficiency and conservation programs are doing well and saving money, and can do better. The other document that I wanted to hand out is a document from the American Council for an Energy Efficient Economy. This is their national scorecard of the assessments of the state's energy conservation and efficiency programs. And the most important finding, in my opinion, from their scorecard can be found as you flip it over on the very back page, which lists the savings as a percentage of electricity sales. This is a cost per dollar from 2003, and you'll notice that we are fourth. We in Minnesota are fourth. That the cumulative annual kilowatt hour savings as a percentage of kilowatt hour sales is 6.69%. What that sort of shows is that that we get a big bang for our energy efficiency dollars. And so with that, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, let me walk through what it is that the ACEE evaluated and the OLA audited. Quick background on SIP itself. The electric utilities have to spend a minimum by statute of 1.5% of their gross operating revenues. Xcel has to spend 2% by statute. Gas utilities have a minimum spending requirement of 0.5% of their gross operating revenues. The expenditures from these utilities is to serve a wide range of customer classes. They must do so in a cost-effective way. And the statute also explicitly requires them to provide programs targeting low-income customers. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, this slide sort of shows in a pie chart form the total dollars spent and who spends it. The blue portion of the pie is IOU Electrics with about $50 million. The next largest wedge is the green at $22 million, which is Co-op Electrics. The tan wedge are IOU Gas, natural gas, at about $15 million. Red is Muni Electrics at $10.7 million. And the final little sliver of about $1 million is Muni Gas. So when you sort of add that up, clearly, the electrics spend the most on SIP spending at about $82-83 million. Gas spend $16 million on SIP for approximately $99 million a year of utility expenditures, all ratepayer collected on energy conservation efforts. The other important point of this slide, members of the committee, is that when you add XL Energy's electric of 42.5 with its 4.7 million of XL Energy gas, you get to roughly $47 million, which means they're approximately half of the total SIP expenditures, XL Energy. And then this chart will show you also by company by company. The utility, specifically the investor-owned, will do recover all of their SIP expenditures from customers. They ask for that recovery from the Department of Commerce by way of the Public Utilities Commission. It's authorized by statute. Municipal and co-op utilities are not rate regulated, so each governing board determines how SIP expenditures will be recovered, but we also assume that they collect most of their SIP expenditures from their members or their customers. There is an incentive for IOUs to do energy conservation and efficiency. The committee has already heard a little bit about decoupling. This is not a decoupling effort. This is an effort to sort of, within the current arrangements, to give them financial incentives to do energy efficiency. That they will receive a financial incentive up to 30% of their SIP spending if they meet or exceed their energy savings goals as established by their plan that it is submitted by them and approved by me as the delegated authority, delegated person responsible for approving those. The incentive that they receive is based on a percentage of the actual net benefits, and that incentive is authorized by Minnesota statute. It's a complicated incentive mechanism that goes through a formula. I don't completely understand this. Christy does. So if you have a specific question, I look forward to you asking those of her. This slide, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, doesn't show up particularly well, and you have to sort of squint on it, and we'll try to give it to you in a blow-up form. But then this slide sort of shows the historic energy savings, at least historic in the sense of the last 5, 6, 7 years. The top table is electric utilities, where you see the all-electric average over the from 2001 through 2005 was 0.85%. It's broken down, that table shows the broken down by individual utility by year. So you can sort of see, as you look at these numbers, that the numbers do fluctuate year to year and by utility by utility. Natural gas, similarly, is the bottom table. The all gas average over 97-2005 was just under 0.5% or 0.49%. Again, the actual savings vary year to year, utility by utility. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, this chart shows our more or less back of the envelope, but sort of an intelligent back of the envelope analysis of the energy savings on the electric. The top blue line is what I refer to as a SIP-less world, a world where there was not the energy conservation programs. The pink middle line is the savings as a result of SIP. And you can sort of see a significant delta between what energy use and consumption would be without SIP. The bottom line, the burgundy line, is our estimation of what energy consumption would be when we achieve greater energy savings of approximately 1.5%. So we improve our overall energy savings use. That's what we think that line would look like. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, this is the same chart, same analysis, but for gas. And what's significant about this is not only the differences between the lines themselves, but the flatness of natural gas consumption as you move out. This is the same way of spreading the table that I just showed you a couple minutes ago by company, and you can see the various savings on a bar chart, bar graph format. For electrics and for gas. We have this data, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for IOUs. We don't really have it for co-ops and munis, but we see no reason why these charts wouldn't also be indicated of that, indicative of that. In the energy conservation and efficiency program, SIPs, we also need to pay attention to, as I've already indicated, the low-income programs for both gas and electric, research, development, and evaluation of energy conservation and efficiency, the promotion of Energy Star buildings, which is something that we do along with the sustainable guidelines and benchmarking of buildings, particularly state and government buildings. The current low-income program spends roughly, in an aggregate, about $4.7 million out of the SIP. It's a three-year historic average by statute. It is one of the observations from the OLA's report of a couple years ago that we do away with that 3 years, because we find that while it was an example of where a good intention had turned into a handicap, because it's turned into a ceiling rather than a floor. There have been efforts in the last couple years to try to fix that, and I hope we can do that certainly this year. Most of the conservation efforts are for low income are done through contracts with utilities, with local service providers. Research and development and evaluation is also in the statute. The statute requires a 10% cap on R&D, a 3% cap on evaluation. If everyone hit that cap, their respective caps, in 2005, we estimate that it would be about $13 million in R&D and evaluation. The five-year annual average is only $3.6 million. Currently, each utility does its own R&D and evaluation. Energy Star buildings is something that's very important to the department. It's something that Governor Palencia made a significant portion of his initiative. This sort of gives you a list of where we are and how much we can improve. Where K-12 schools and supermarkets are the ones that are paying the most amount of attention, along with offices. But there are a lot of zeros on this, Mr. Chairman, that I think we can and should work to fill in. Benchmarking and sustainable building guidelines provides assistance to construction and architects. It also applies to any new building built by the state of Minnesota. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, there are a lot of other or additional resources that we use, that you may want to look at, and this is a list of their websites. And in closing, Mr. Chairman, I do want to sort of say that we've had a very, very positive set of conversations led by Representative Kalin to work on a number of these provisions in the bills that have been put forward. And I look forward to, again, working to achieve a very, very high common denominator that increases the state's energy efficiency and conservation efforts, saves the people of Minnesota money, and serves all of our constituents well. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That concludes, and I look forward to Christy's answers of your questions.
Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and either Dick McGarvey or to Christy. On page 2, you've got two slides in the middle there with the three different trajectories. Can you give us the quick version of how what methodology went into determining how much the savings could be? I mean, did you count dishwashers and leaky windows, or is there some other methodology that went into determining where we're at under the where we are in the existing CIP, but the new incentivized version that's being proposed? It looks like a pretty dramatic drop. What do you lay that to?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Representative, that's a perfect question for me to give up this chair to allow Christy to answer.
Ms. Brisbane, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Christy Brisbane for the Department of Commerce. And to answer Representative Beard's question, the way we arrived at this was we used forecasts from the EIA Energy Outlook, and so that was the projections for the increased consumption going forward. Then we took that and assumed our average from the 10-year average on the electric and gas side, so 0.85% annually on the electric and 0.49 on the gas. That's the representation in the middle line. And then the bottom line is the 1.5% that's been put out as sort of the goal to achieve, to drop down that percentage going forward. So what you're seeing is on the gas side almost double the energy savings, or on the electric side almost double the energy savings, and on the gas side almost three times the energy savings annually.
Representative Beard.
So then I understand, Mr. Chairman, that Ms. Bruce, from the bottom line is the goal, reflect the 1.5. Is there a rationale for where 1.5 came from, other than an ambitious goal, or do we think we have a reasonable chance of hitting this?
Ms. Bruce, then.
We think the 1.5% is a very aggressive target, but one that's achievable. if we look at things, including our SIP program and then other things we do externally to promote energy efficiency in the state.
Thank you.
Further questions for Commissioner Garvey? Representative Kalin?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to just address one thing that has been one thing that I've learned through this process that Commissioner Garvey mentioned on it's on page 3, the research and development slide, and we refer to the cap as a 10% cap on research and development and a 3% cap on evaluation. That cap, because we have spending requirements today, and I'm looking to Ms. Brisbane and Mr. Garvey just to make sure that we're articulating this properly, but because we have spending requirements today, it's a cap on what can be applied to those spending requirements. There's nothing that would stop a utility from spending more money on research and development other than the bottom line and common business sense. But just to make sure that that's the cap on what they can apply to their spending requirement, is it? I believe that I'm saying that correctly.
Yes, Bruce.
Mr. Chair and committee, the only thing I would add to that is that it also then refers or relates to what they can recover from their ratepayers through the SIP program.
Well, Representative Kalin and members were somewhat at a disadvantage here in that most recent draft of this bill is not quite yet available. Hopefully within about a half an hour or so it will be. Representative Kalin, or as long as we have Ms. Brisbane at the table, would you like to address some of the changes from the original bill, or how do you want to proceed with that?
I believe that the chair has been consulted on many of the changes, so he's aware of the direction that the bill is generally going. So I leave it to your discretion if you'd like to me to address some of the sort of global changes between what the governor's proposed and then what my bill does as well. I'd be happy to do so now. Take 2 minutes to do so.
Well, perhaps you should do that just to give us a little better context, because it's going to be difficult for our testifiers to
yes.
orient themselves unless we know what we're what the current state of the language is.
Absolutely. I think the overall engine that's driving the proposed change to the Conservation Improvement Program and to energy savings statewide is the goal that the governor set out, which is a very aggressive goal, to achieve energy savings of 1.5% statewide. And I say the word energy savings or the term very deliberately, because right now we have, as you've heard, a spending requirement. And our hope is to move, and I believe we will be moving there, to from merely requiring that money be spent in a cost-effective manner to requiring that energy be saved. So kilowatt hours of electricity, cubic feet of natural gas throughput. So that the 1.5% savings will be achieved through direct SIP savings and through indirect savings, including, pull out the bill here, the most recent draft, including appliance standards, tighter building codes, including the energy code, which is hopefully being updated this year, market transformation and projects that hope to both significantly and in other ways subtly affect and change consumer behavior, and a variety of other initiatives to become either more energy efficient or to actually conserve energy. And some of the other additional indirect savings will include some incentives for new commercial construction, some incentives for local governments to build public buildings more efficiently, public building energy report cards, and others that I believe this committee may be hearing on Friday, and among others. So the goal, again, is a major portion, a minimum of 1% of that 1.5%, 1% being through direct SIP savings, and then these ledges of indirect additional savings that may not be able to be attributable directly to utility and our partner efforts. We will be maintaining a spending requirement for the first 3-year filing period, so there will, in essence, be this overlap between the ongoing existing program of the spending requirements and then the new savings requirements. And the bill draft directs the department, I believe, to make a report to the legislature in January of 2010, evaluating whether the spending requirement can be dropped from the next filing cycle. So we then move to just energy savings. The 4 other components of the bill, besides the goal, is what I call the SIP mechanics, sort of how and when things get filed, these conservation improvement plans get filed, and a lot of other things that we could really have 3 people in Christie's job and still not do as well as Christie is doing, with one person really managing all those SIP plans and the filings and helping to review them. There's a research and development component that includes technical assistance, and I believe that the benchmarking and sustainable building design guidelines are a key part of that, as well as the research development evaluation. And there's also a tool that will help Representative Beard's question actually sort of goes at how do we measure what we're doing, and how do we, without putting meters on the inside on every toaster and refrigerator, we have a good understanding of how effective each individual tool, each individual step can be. And so developing these statewide assumptions is an urgent task that will allow us to account more thoroughly and more accurately for the kilowatt hours saved and the cubic feet saved. And so that program actually is urgent, and we're asking that funding to kick in July 1 of this year to get that project done, hopefully by the end of the calendar year. There's a low-income portion of the bill that is processed as a result of a strong consensus-building stakeholder process. And I know Representative Saylor has worked hard on many of those issues over the years, and I believe that she'll be helping present that portion on Wednesday. And then there's also a significant section on decoupling. And so those are the major components there. The statewide goal, 1.5%. Each utility will begin at 1.5% and be able to appeal their way down to their goal of a minimum of 1%. And we believe that some of them will be, depending on their history and their success, whether they picked off the so-called low-hanging fruit, will be able to end up somewhere in the neighborhood of between 1.0 and 1.5 within a range there. And then these indirect savings on top of that. I believe that's the skeleton of the bill, and again, I think we'll have to wait for actual language here, but I think that should open it up for some questions in addition that could help clarify where we are now and where we're going.
Ms. Brusman, any additions or corrections?
No, Mr. Chair, I think that's a fair representation of an overview.
Thank you. Any further questions before we go to other testifiers? Seeing none, thank you very much. Looking forward to getting into the details of the bill on Wednesday. Next on the agenda, we have Jim Walters from Rochester Public Utilities. Mr. Walters, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chairman Hilty. I really appreciate being here. Well, I'd just like to take a few minutes of the committee's...
Would you begin by identifying yourself for the record, please, Mr.
Oh, sure. I'm Jim Walters, Director of Customer Relations for Rochester Public Utilities.
Thank you.
What I'd like to do is just explain a little bit more about who we are, just a few minutes, and tell you a little bit about what we're currently doing in our SIP efforts and what we consider are the ongoing challenges with SIP. So I'll get right into it. We're just to give an idea, we're a pretty large municipal as municipals go. I think you'd have to go far and wide to find a larger one, and we serve about 50,000 electric customers in Rochester. Our SIP budget is right around $2 million a year. We joined in a marketing kind of a way with Austin and Owatonna to more effectively administer our programs. We decided to do that back in 2003. As I said, we spend about $2 million on SIP, and this last year, in fact, we were able to achieve a 2.2 megawatt reduction and a 10,000 megawatt hour reduction in energy usage, so we think we've been pretty successful. However, we do see challenges, and it's interesting that Representative Galen referred to low-hanging fruit. I think you stole that from me because that I always talk about that. But the fact of the matter is the fruit is getting higher up in the tree. We would not have made our SIP goal this year, the 2.2 megawatts, had it not been for LEDs and all of the stop and go lights in town. We're not going to have that next year. And if there's any one message I can bring to you from the trenches, is that the fruit is definitely higher in the tree. We recognize this, and what we've done is we've hired Franklin Energy to work with us to help us climb the tree to get to some of this fruit. So regardless of, I'm not here to comment about 145, but that is a real challenge for utilities, make no doubt about it. The days of the CFLs, putting in a CFL and maybe changing out motors, that's still happening, but that's the low-hanging fruit. It's getting more and more difficult, and what we have to do are more like doing audits, process audits at a AMPI milk producer in Rochester or an IBM or that kind of thing. And another challenge that we have, because the fruit is a little higher in the tree, the cost for getting to that fruit is significantly more. There's not this linear relationship. In other words, if we're going to achieve more, we can't simply look at this from a linear perspective and say, well, we spent $2 million this last year, so if we spend another $2 million, we'll get another 2 megawatts. And that's a very important thing to consider. And I really don't have an estimate for what that cost would be. But make no mistake about it, that is a truism. The advantages we have, as I mentioned earlier, we're a large municipal, and we have some advantages that the rest of our brethren, if you will, our smaller municipals don't have. We're pretty darn large. And because of that, we have the power to establish some real relationships with trade allies who we really have to depend on to achieve our SIP goals. It might be a heating and cooling business and the like. Further, because we're in Rochester, third largest city in Minnesota, you know, we do have that trade ally infrastructure in town. And so, you know, that's another advantage that we have that a lot of our municipal brethren do not have. And lastly, we have, because of our size, we have the means to really do some wonderful things from the promotion side, and that's really key. In fact, some of my colleagues from the other utilities, we've all talked about to achieve these goals perhaps really takes some behavioral change efforts, and, a lot of that you can probably put in the into promotion bin. But we're fortunate that way too, that again our municipal colleagues are not in that same boat. So that's a little bit who we are, what we're doing, and some of the significant challenges, ongoing challenges that we have with SIP. And I'd be happy to answer any questions if there are any.
Questions for members? Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Walters, legislative auditor said there's SIP programs just as viable today and ongoing as it was in the past. And I thought at the time before he said that, at least, I always believe in legislative auditor. I thought, well, the low-hanging fruit, the easy things are already done. How many energy-efficient ballasts can you put in lights? And how much can you, as a grocer, level your load by having your compressors cycle at different times and so forth. The easy, common sense things I thought are done is about over with. But then legislative auditor says we have just as much to accomplish in the future as we did in the past. So now you have to look for that. In your opinion, is it going to be able to match the past with the future?
Mr. Walters.
Representative Gunther.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe. All I'm saying is that the cost is going to be significant because the fruit is higher in the tree. It may be some of the same fruit, but it's a little higher climb to get to it.
Okay. Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Walters, is there a way that you can create or invent ways to ultimately save even more power by acts that you do?
Well,
load balancing and so forth.
Sure. I can tell you about some of the things we are doing. Where maybe you've heard about our research with the University of Minnesota on fuel cells and geothermal heat pumps. I think that those kinds of efforts could definitely overusing this term, perhaps, but bear fruit. You started it, so.
I stole it from you, I heard. So.
Could definitely bear fruit, but I mean, are there creative ways? I think that from the promotional side, from the down in the trenches side, that's why we work with Austin and are working with Austin and Owatonna, and for that matter, our wholesale provider, to really help us climb that tree. Other than that, I don't know what other creative. And by the way, I think I mentioned that we hired Franklin Energy. We're outsourcing work as well. So those are creative means, I think, and definitely available to others.
Thank you. I presume all this reference to fruit is what prompted the question from the grocer.
Absolutely, Mr. Chairman. I kind of think of La Crescent just a little farther east to him.
Representative McGinnis.
Thank you. One of the things that Representative Kalin talked about is standards for new buildings and how we do all these new things. But I live in an old city, and Rochester is an old city, and it seems to me we have so many, just the old tried and true insulation of older homes is sitting out there like a huge elephant. Is this something you all are talking about?
Mr. Walter.
Excuse me, could you introduce yourself again? I'm going to read. No.
Well, it's the name's too hard to pronounce anyway. It's Representative Wagenius.
I still didn't hear that.
Wagenius.
Representative Wagenius. Interesting that you're talking about that, because one of the things we had talked about was just that, to form a team, if you will, that goes and looks at the whole house and buttons up the house, if you will. The problem we have is that when you look at that, it's just for the energy that you're going to save and the dollars that you're going to have to expend, it just isn't in the cards. It's very difficult to justify. Does that answer your question?
Representative Wagenius.
Well, it answers my question that sounds like something we're not going to be doing. What I'm hearing.
Would you repeat that, please? I'm sorry.
It sounds like that's something then you're not planning on doing, that there are no easy ways, obviously, to redo an older home, but there are no, what I'm hearing for you is there, even without doing the whole ball of wax, doing a half a ball of wax, insulating the attic, is still not in the cards. Is that what I'm hearing?
Not entirely. Let me tell you that we have joined with Minnesota Energy in Rochester to do exactly what, well, to an extent, exactly what you're talking about, and that is, again, to provide the homeowner that one-stop shop, whether it be insulation, which is more justified when you look at it from a heating perspective than electric. So we've partnered with them to help the homeowner muddle through all this conservation stuff when you have differing utilities. So that's the extent of our efforts as far as from a whole home perspective. We've, again, partnered with Minnesota Energy in a lot of our programs and worked together with them to be more effective.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Wagenius.
If saving energy is an outcome that we, older homes seem to me just to be, I know that they're hard fruit to pick, but there's so much of it. The tree is full.
Mr. Walters.
Yes, Representative. I would not argue that at all. Certainly, older homes are not energy efficient in general, and they would be a prime target.
Representative Walters.
Thank you, Chairman Hilton. To Mr. Walters, you've worked extensively down in the Rochester area, and first of all, I just want to acknowledge the work that you have done. Rochester Public Utilities is definitely out there in the community. We see them all the time. They are definitely championing the cause for conservation, and not only that, but our environmental initiatives. I know you've been at many of the meetings down in our area, so I want to acknowledge the work that you are doing. But I've also had the opportunity to sit down with members from Rochester Public Utilities and other citizens in my area that were concerned with the way we were going with conservation and some of the energy initiatives. And one item that was brought up was your audits that you perform in businesses and in public buildings. Can you tell me, for instance, how many have been done in Rochester? Do you have an idea of, out of all of the businesses that you serve, how many of those businesses have had audits done?
Representative Welty, we have, for the rest of you, we have about 5,000 to 6,000, well, let's call it 6,000 commercial customers. I think of that total, a couple hundred is, I think I'm pretty good ballpark on that, that we have performed audits where we go in the building, be it a grocery store, Joe's insurance agency, whatever, and perform an audit and then prescribe energy saving, but yet it, energy saving measures, but it still comes down then to the owner of that business to take advantage of those, or to take action on those recommendations.
Representative Briner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this question would be for either you or Representative Kalin. In terms of existing programs or potential, is there anything in place that looks at an energy audit of homes at the point of sale and the possibility of setting some type of standard to be met before the home is sold? I mean, to me, that's the answer maybe to Representative Wagenius's question is, how do we institute a structured format for retrofitting older homes?
Mr. Walters.
Yes, thank you. Representative
Reinert,
I believe you had a two-part question. What are we doing with new homes and older homes?
My question is there anything in place or are we looking at anything that would require at the point of sale any standard to be met?
Yeah. Well, I can tell you, at least from a Rochester perspective, that we, in fact, are working on that very thing, working with developers and builders to, in fact, meet a gold medal standard home or some type like that. That's about all I can tell you.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Briner, that's a phenomenal question, actually. I think what Mr. Walters has testified to is really talks, there's different, and Representative Gorgonius' question, there are different factors in consumer behavior in commercial markets and industrial markets and residential. And in residential, actually, I believe our next testifier will talk a little bit about his idea for a couple of options when it comes to at the point of sale of finding a comfortable time of intervention to provide real meaningful incentives and auditing to switch to a couple of things. I just want to identify what those are. When we talk about residential, and energy in the residential sector, we have issues of the building envelope. How much infiltration? I mean, that's my training really emphasized in architecture school was infiltration of cold air and then loss of warm air. And so we've tightened up the building envelope, and actually the new energy code ends up addressing with some of the byproducts, the mold issues that happen when tightening up too much and not doing the ventilation that's required for some building types. But there's also issues of appliances. And I'm going to then separate out actually our core heating, furnace and air conditioning. And then there's also issues of windows, the tightest windows possible, I think a real commonly known one is Anderson Renewal, moving to tighter and lower E windows. And I think I'm going to just sort of end there with the overview, but I think Mr. Johnson's going to talk about at least the appliances piece of this, but it's a really important factor. I think that it's a great opportunity to get in and do some audits. I think we want to be careful that we don't overburden of what is already a very complicated process for the layperson in terms of buying and selling a house, but it's a good idea.
Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe just shed a little more talk on maybe, I don't know if it's going to be interest, but to where Representative Genius's point, my wife and I bought a house in Le Sueur. Started in 1840s, 1850s, I guess it was, and been added on to three times. So we're in the middle of rebuilding. We're living this experience right now. The energy savings on that little 1,300 square foot story and a half will pay for the improvements we're making in probably 200 years or so. The improvements are not about energy efficiency, although we put in a new water heater that is much more effective and efficient than the one that was there. We're doing some things with windows and insulation. Most of it had to do with safety and functionality. Just the house was wired with knob and post wiring. It's an amazing thing. It hadn't burned down already, but when bedrooms had a single bulb hanging in the middle, I'm afraid we probably upped the electrical consumption of that house because we put in real light fixtures that made the place bright and cheery and did some things like that. The new windows, yes, I'm sure they save heat, but they also keep the house from being so darn drafty when the wind blows and so on and so forth. So I think I heard a point you made here that perhaps when you're getting into building retrofitting, doing small houses like we have in housing stock in older towns is one thing. I'd have hated to just bulldoze the house. It just didn't make economic or sense from a heritage perspective. But maybe doing warehouses, factories, or school buildings is one story, one situation. But retrofitting older houses, maybe the payback isn't there from the CIP perspective, but there certainly is from having a really nice little house, a cute little house that has good resale value. However, I do have two questions for the testifier that relate to what counts in the CIP program, at least as it's being proposed. So either for Representative Kalin or Mr. Walters, Mr. Chair, if I may. If you manage to shave your peaks and fill your valleys due to load management, does that count as an effective part of the CIP program?
Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Beard, this issue of metrics, what gets counted and not, and how we measure it is critical. And I'm going to actually again make sure that Ms. Brusen is confirming what I'm about to say. But that right now we really are talking about peak demand savings, mm-hmm. about decreasing the height of that sine wave and really managing out those peaks, and as we talked about a month ago with the cold snap. What we're talking about is now actually kilowatt hours saved, so real energy saved, which is a very different issue.
Okay. I could see a whole long line of discussion about that. Because base load that's built for a peak. Remember we had the discussion about either the bus routes or air traffic control being built for peak demand, not for the valleys in the middle. But we'll leave that for another day. Second part of the question, if maybe for Mr. Walters, if 3M was to drop a shift and cut their load back, would that count as kilowatt hours saved under the CIP program?
No, it wouldn't. Not to my understanding. That's a supply side endeavor, so it wouldn't qualify.
Okay.
Representative Beard, could I comment on your previous question? Because it really leads into Representative Brinder. I'm sorry. My hearing is not the best, so I turned 50 and boy. But actually, you bring up a very good point that I wanted to comment on earlier, and that is when you look at an older home, when you, from an energy perspective, you're looking at the heating and cooling systems. That's where the gold is. And there is a technology that we promote heavily that does exactly what you're talking about, Representative Beard, and that is to reduce the peak and actually move that energy to the valleys, which is a good thing. And that's called a geothermal heat pump. And it's not fuel cells. Yeah, fuel cells are great. We're leading research in that area. But what I mean by that is they're here and now. We have a theater in Rochester there's not a gas line to it. It's totally heated and cooled with a pond that sits next to the theater. And we could retrofit older homes, and we could put in a geothermal heat pump. And back in my days with Lion Energy in Iowa, we know that you wouldn't have to do much to that home to have it pass a home energy rating level, the passable level, whatever that was. So I just wanted to comment on that. That's not to say that one wouldn't want to go and do what you can on the way of tightening up the envelope of a home or a business. But with a geothermal heat pump, we can save. In fact, there was some, there's been a lot of notoriety about geothermal heat pumps lately, and the amount of energy that could be saved is, you've read it. There's a lot of, you know, CFLs will save this much, and, you know, but geothermal heat pumps would save a lot of energy, and they would help, would certainly make an impact on existing homes, which is where we really have to get. And it does do exactly what you were talking about, Representative Beard. It does move that energy. It does fill those valleys, and that's a really good thing.
Members, we do have a rather full agenda, and if there are no pressing questions for Mr. Walters, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next on the agenda, Mr. Larry Johnson. Mr. Johnson, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chairman Hilty, members of the committee. I'm Larry Johnson with Southern Minnesota Municipal Power Agency. I'm the Director of Corporate Development Agency Relations and have the SIP programs and kind of the integrated resource planning in my area. I've handed you out a handout here because I wanted to keep things rather short and tight and quick for you. And then I guess as some of the questions have already come up, it might be appropriate to address those. It's helpful that my colleague, Mr. Walters, was here ahead of time. As you can see on the top of that, SEMPA serves 18 member utilities throughout the state of Minnesota. Rochester is one of them. Our three largest, as he has mentioned, kind of work together in kind of a joint marketing opportunity to leverage kind of that urban market, if you will, between Austin, Owatonna, and Rochester that have some common media markets and can lever things there. The next breakout kind of fits the current filing schedule. The next seven are larger members that file a complete SIP plan under the current regulations. The smaller eight members that are listed then underneath that implement the programs, but they file what's kind of called an abbreviated program. What I wanted to do here with this was just to give you a feel for the level of activities that we currently are doing, as Representative Kalin had asked. We have a rather comprehensive set of programs for both the commercial and industrial side. We've been running most of those since 1993. They are listed on the back page of this document, so you can look at them at your leisure. But on the residential, we have a number of high-efficiency rebate programs, 13-plus different technologies that we address in that area, as well as equipment recycling, educational and audit offerings, as was talked about a little bit earlier. I mentioned one thing in the middle there that has a check next to it because I see it as an indicator of how we attempt to try to be innovative, and I think it gets at Representative Beard's question in part, what else is out there, what can you be looking for? We're actually one of only about three utilities in the country that are attempting to do something with high-efficiency dehumidifiers. Dehumidifiers are a huge hog. For those of you who follow this stuff, there's not a lot of difference between your air conditioner and your dehumidifier, frankly, other than the fact that you maybe run your dehumidifier all the time. You know, so there's some reasons to try to look for opportunities there. We've come up with some innovative ways to try to do a turn-in program on those that I think have worked well for us. On the commercial industrial program side, we have a number of the programs you'd expect there on the business side. Lighting, heating, ventilating, and air conditioning, motors, adjustable drives, custom programs for those that don't quite fit into another category that you'd maybe expect. Under the education and training, because it kind of hit at one of the questions that came out, maybe from Representative Wagenius, but in terms of building recommissioning, and I think Representative Beard followed up on that too, that maybe there could be sizable, if you will, opportunities in recommissioning in commercial buildings. One of the things that we're doing at the moment is we're running kind of a, if you will, it's known as BOLC, Building Operator Certification Program, and we have a number of our member communities that have companies that have people that are going there as their building operators and essentially learning various levels of skills and activities to take home and apply in their own particular buildings to save energy. Again, that's an indirect program, so it's very difficult in those sorts of things to measure the actual kilowatt-hour savings, but they are, in fact, very valuable in terms of modifying behavior. I've mentioned a little bit down there about the low-income program. I just want to hit on the fact that, the SEMPA members were Energy Star Award winners in 2003 and 2004 from the U.S. Department of Energy and the Environmental Protection Agency for the programs that we've been running. At the bottom of the page, I'm mentioning just a little bit there in terms of, some of the metrics in terms of what the required spending was in 2005, the actual spending, and just very, very quickly, I would turn your attention to the graph on the backside of that first page. Because it will illustrate a couple of things, and, then I'd like to kind of wrap up on, some of the questions that were raised. Off to the right of the graph, you're seeing 2005 actuals, and then 6 and 7 and 8 are budgeted periods. But they're split out between the triad, those three largest groups, and then the seven next largest members of ours. The only thing I want you to understand there is if we were to take 2005 and kind of create some existing ratios between what was spent at the 1.5% spending, the savings that related to that, very difficult to tell if that would be a unilateral moving sort of relationship. But to move to the levels that we're talking about here would require substantively more spending to get there. So with that having been said, there were a couple questions that came up that I guess I would be happy to address. Representative Kalin mentioned one. When we start talking about the metrics and we start looking at, kilowatt-hour savings and benchmarking against that, I think there were some very good questions that came out of the group. I would expect electric energy intensity to move over time, frankly. When you rehab your house, maybe you got rid of your very wonderful 27-inch Sony flat-screen TV that would use 85 watts and replaced it with either a 42-inch LCD that uses 145 watts or a 42-inch plasma that uses 550 watts. There's an indicator of some things that we have going on as a lifestyle change that just indicate that we need to pay attention to those metrics as we go forward because substantive things change. We may also find that as we get more serious about looking at global warming implications, that we may find that electrification may, in fact, turn out to be oftentimes a solution, not necessarily a problem. We might find that plug-in hybrids may become very useful for us. We might find out that things like maglev trains would make a lot of sense. So we need to be open to that. Now, for the coup de grace, so to speak, when you would perhaps ask, are there any ideas that we might come up with, understanding that these metrics are difficult, how do you push the envelope further? This is a cross, actually, between, I think, what Representative Wagenius was asking and someone else. Ultimately, I think that if we're to get deep penetration into where we want to go with these things, there are many of these activities, whether we do wonderful marketing programs, great program design, they're still behavioral. And you have to convince somebody at the other end of the plug-in, if you will, quite frankly, to make that decision. I think to look at very large reductions, we should seriously consider the thought process of perhaps a commission that would establish on an ongoing basis a very comprehensive set of what you might consider to be efficiencies for product for sale in Minnesota. We do a lot of things to try to get in a retrofit along that line. And we do an awful lot of stuff with the Energy Star stuff. That's how the awards came about, trying to make sure that people at burnout will buy the correct appliance. But at the end of the day, you're still going to have an array of appliances to choose from. We perhaps should give substantive thought to whether or not we want to set baseline efficiencies. Say, for example, if you don't want to take the California route and talk about banning the incandescent light bulb, you can talk about lumens per watt. And you can talk about the efficacy of lighting that you probably want to have out there and then let technologies kind of coalesce around it. But if we're going to get to deep substantive discounts, we need to really consider these things, whether it be refrigerators, washing machines, lighting. On the commercial industrial side, I worked early on in my career with Ontario Hydro folks pushing their motor vendors in Canada to design even higher efficiency motors. So there are some real opportunities, we think, that not just kind of setting this target, but thinking it through very comprehensively as those things change over time, looking at what the standards are. And I guess in the last week that we've talked about this, we've seen Australia turn around and decide to ban the incandescent light bulb, I guess, on that front of it. But there are some things, I think, that bear some thought, because trying to get to that deep penetration is going to be difficult. So with that, I would be happy to answer any questions that I can.
Are there questions from members at this time? Representative Wagenius.
One of the things as you chatted with us, I started thinking about and how Minneapolis, or at least my district in Minneapolis, lights up during the holiday season. And it didn't used to do that. Folks put out simple wreaths and maybe one string of lights. Do we have any idea what the energy draw is on a state because of people putting up holiday lights?
Mr. Johnson.
Yes. Chairman Hilty and Representative Wagenius, I can't answer that question. I can give you an anecdotal piece of information that's a small piece. And that's in our dispatch center, our dispatchers on our system. Okay, we're talking roughly a 500-megawatt system. It's small. That they claim that you can see a difference with the load bump up in the winter because, again, we're a summer-peaking utility. And right around that holiday time, they say that you can see that. Now, we last year, we had a number of member communities that really, they decorated all of their trees, the utilities, I should add, decorated all of their trees with LED lights. We had a big push on LED lights last year for that very reason. I suspect there's some behavioral modification that needs to take place there, too. Especially if you're one of the lovers of the small little white incandescent lights, because that's a hard color in LED to replicate. But I'll put in a plug for the colored ones because they're wonderful. But that's a huge issue that normally it's not going to be the sort of thing. It's typically an educational campaign. It's not going to be a real easy rebatable type item.
Further questions?
Mr. Chairman, could we just find out maybe from Commerce at some point what kind of draw we're using to do holiday lights these days?
I think that would be a very interesting question to pursue, and we will do that. Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that the challenge is to balance the standards with behavioral changes, and I think we probably all perked our ears up a little bit when we heard on the radio last month about the energy challenge in Minnesota's college campuses. And I've spoken with some of the students, but certainly remember the radio piece that highlighted on one campus several thousand CFLs, I think, two thousand CFLs that were distributed on campus. Even looking at little things like, pulling off your cell charger and your Trio charger and our Crackberries and everything that everyone else is playing with right now, but pulling those chargers out of the wall when they're not charging, little things like that. So I think that there's a mix, and just to give this sense of, in 1 month, a group of, as one Ole student described it, as a green berets, going around their campuses and just being really proactive and finding those opportunities. So I think we have a lot of we have a generation that is taking this ethic on and really saying, yes, we can do it. We can make that reach.
I appreciate that, Representative Galen. We were, Gustavus, St. Peter's one of our communities. And we have the folks at Gustavus really fired up about this and essentially donated 2,000 CFLs to help kick the program off and get that going. So it has been kind of a fun program.
Further questions for Mr. Johnson? Seeing none, thank you, Mr. Johnson. Next on the agenda, Ms. Doyle from XL. We'll just put covers on it. So, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representatives. I'll probably wait a little bit for them to hand out the packets, but I am Suzanne Doyle. I've worked for Xcel Energy for 34 years. Currently, I'm manager of the DSM Regulatory Strategy and Planning Group. And we thank you for inviting us here today to talk about our long-standing record of demand-side management activities, And we're also proud of the way the state of Minnesota has supported these activities through all these years. I'm going to just give you an overview of our programs today, our history of our BSM accomplishments, and our current and future goals. We are planning to come back, I think, either Wednesday or a future date to address the legislation after we see the latest version and have a chance to digest it. So I probably won't be addressing the particular wording of the legislation today. After you get your packet, in your packet you should have some slides I'm going to go through, and then I've given you for our residential programs and our business programs more detailed information about the program for your reference. The first slide, or second page, second slide, is some background on the composition of Xcel Energy's electric customers.
Doyle, we do have available the most recent draft, which is being
Mr. Chair?
Distributed, but
I don't
let that interrupt your presentation.
Okay. I believe, Mr. Chair, that we're gonna hold the copies for after committee, just to keep us focused on what we're doing here, and that's okay with you, Mr. Chair.
That's probably a good idea. So, Ms. Doyle, please proceed. Sorry about the interruption.
The charts on slide two show the state of Minnesota's electric composition of our customers. And I'm showing this to show you that residential customers take up 90% of our 90% of our customer base. We have about 1.2 million customers in the state of Minnesota. However, when you look at the graph on the lower right, you'll see that the energy used by those residential customers is about 28% of our total energy, and our small commercial, industrial, and large commercial industrial take up about 72% of our electricity sales. We use this information when we're designing our programs to show us where we should be spending our money. And in this case, our budget for DSM is about 67% for commercial industrial, and the other 33% is spent on residential programs. The next slide on page three shows the same thing for our gas business in Minnesota. And there we have about 465,000 customers, and 92% of them are residential customers. About half of our usage for gas consumption is used by residential customers, and the other half is by our commercial, industrial, and interruptible customers. Again, we split our budget for gas, DSM, about 50-50. Thank you. So we spend about half of our money on C&I and half of it on residential gas conservation programs. Slide four shows a history of our electrical savings achievements back through to 1990. We actually began conservation programs in the state of Minnesota probably in the mid-1980s. Started really ramping up, though, in the early 90s. The darker bars on the graph are the energy savings each year, and the lighter bars are demand savings at time of system peak. And then the line with the arrows on it is the money we've spent. In the total energy over the 17 years between 1990 and 2006, we've saved about 4,100 gigawatt hours in energy conservation. To give you some perspective on that, that represents the total electricity used by about 500,000 households over that time period. Our demand savings, the light gray bars, adds up to about over 2,000 megawatts over the 17 years, and it represents replacing the need for about 250 megawatt power plants during that time. We spent over $600 million on electric DSM in Minnesota,
and that averages about $35 million a year. The next graph is something you were talking about a little earlier, and it's showing our load management on a system peak day. And we do have a very aggressive load management program. This chart shows what happens on, actually, this was the summer of 2006 on a peak day, a very hot day, when we send control signals to our 330,000 residential and business saver switch customers. Those are the customers that we cycle their air conditioners 15 minutes on, 15 minutes off during hot system peak days. We also have 2,700 C&I, commercial industrial, energy savings rate customers who we notify on those days to control down, lower their load to a predetermined contracted level. And so that combination of those residential and business saver switch customers and those C&I customers creates that green shape there, and that's how much we estimate on last summer on that day we've lowered our peak. And this, of course, delays peaking plants. We work with our resource planning group to provide a real balanced portfolio of both energy conservation and load management to meet our resource needs. The next graph is our gas DSM achievements over these, actually back to 1995. Over this time period, 12 years, the company has achieved almost 7 million MCF of gas savings through our DSM programs. And this represents the total gas consumption for about 77,000 households during those 12 years. We've spent around $46 million in that time, and that's an average of about $3.8 million a year. Slide 7. This is our business DSM portfolio programs, and this is what you have attached to your packets. There's more detail on these programs. We have about 13 electric business programs, and I think there's 8 gas business programs. The top programs for this past year were the ones in bold: energy design assistance, custom efficiency, lighting efficiency, and motor efficiency. On the gas side, it was boiler efficiency and custom efficiency. We try to design our programs to target every type of C&I customer, and where we don't target them, our custom programs allow customers to apply for a rebate for anything that doesn't fit one of our other programs. So there's just many different types of process improvements that customers can make and efficiency improvements that fall under our custom program. Under our residential, the next slide, slide 8, is our residential DSM programs, and there we have 6 electric programs and 6 gas programs. The top 2 under electric for last year was our central air conditioning and home lighting program, and under gas was Energy Star rebates, which rebates furnaces. Besides programs that target it to specific end uses or measures, we have some programs that look holistically at new construction and existing homes. And I think one of the representatives was talking about insulation, and we do have a newer program that started in 2006 called Home Performance that would give rebates for insulation, and it goes into a home and looks at the total home and finds all the improvements that can be made and then gives rebates for those improvements. Slide 9 shows kind of what it takes for staffing and for human resources to run a program like Excel Energies, and our count for full-time equivalent staff in 2006 was about 67 people, full-time people. It takes a lot of resources to deliver the kind of results that we've been delivering. The 67 full-time equivalent staff are made up of employees from several areas of our company. They work together to design and develop new programs, ensure that our savings estimates are accurate and measurable. They develop the marketing materials that reaches the target markets. They communicate with customers one-to-one on these programs, and we also create plans to ensure that we make our goals, which we take very seriously. Slide 10 shows our recent history of electric savings and our goals for the next few years. The yellow bars on that chart show the 2005 and 2006 actual achievements in electric, and I've shown here also what percent of our retail sales that is. So they're about 0.8%. 2007 through 2009 is our current approved goals that we filed last June through our triennial plan with the DOC, and these are approved goals for those 3 years. The IRP goals are goals that we established through our integrated resource plan that was filed in 2004, and it goes from 2005 through 2019. And when we applied for the resource plan, we actually had a little lower goals, and we negotiated, and these are actually considered very stretching goals for Xcel, according to our potential study that we had done at the same time. I've also put on here the 1%, what the 1% goal would mean for us, and the 1.5%. A 1% of sales goal would equal about 121% of our current IRP goal, and a 1.5% of sales goal would equal 182% of those same goals. And the last slide is showing the same thing for our gas, and shows 2005 and 6 actual and 2007 through 9 approved goals for a triennial. You'll notice that our 2005 and 6 actuals are quite a bit higher and actually hit 1.5%. Some of the reasons for that is we had some very, very large, very few, but very large projects that happened to come in. One project in 2005 had over 479 MCF of that 1.1 million. So those are kind of, and 2006 had the same, and we're planning, we know of one in 2007 that is raising that goal. These are unique projects that we don't expect, and we can't really forecast that they're going to continue to be there in the future. So our goals for 2008 and 9 are down around about the 0.8% mark. That's my overview of Xcel's program. I'd be glad to take questions.
You have questions this time? Representative Saylor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the testifier. I just was wanting to refer back to slide number 9. I was curious in your staffing with your 67 full-time equivalents.
Mm-hmm.
Can you just give me the rough breakdown of how they're dispersed among those jobs? I'm just curious to know what takes the most amount of staffing.
Mr. Chair, yes, I actually have that. The portfolio managers, who are the people that actually market the program and track all the results, and they're the main people that take up 24% of the 67 FTEs. The next biggest is the three areas, the account representatives, the business solution representatives, and the call center. And those are three areas in our company that deal directly with our customers one-on-one. And account representatives deal with our largest commercial industrial customers. Our business solution center deals with our medium and small business customers. And then our call center takes calls from our residential and mass market. Those three areas take up, actually together, they take up the most amount of the FTEs. And it adds up to about 35%. So the three areas together actually add up to the 35% of the FTEs. Our product developers and technical consultants are the people that actually develop our new programs and come up with all the calculations for how we calculate the savings from a measure, and they take up 12%. Rebate processors take up 10%, and then the market, load research, strategic marketing, the regulatory and planning takes up the 9%. I think that adds up close to the 100%. There might be some groups actually missing from this.
Further questions for Ms. Doyle?
Mr. Chair, I would just like to add a quick note. Everyone that I have spoken with about the existing SIP programs points to Excel as one of the shining stars in what can be done and what has been done. And so I just want to thank them for their good work for over a decade plus in establishing a strong market for energy efficiency and really getting that market penetration that we're hoping we can all achieve under the new strengthened SIP program.
Thank you.
Members, I think that we probably do not have the possibility of hearing from the remaining testifiers on our agenda today, but we do have the most recent draft of the bill available for distribution. I presume that the people who wanted to testify today are going to be interested in sharing their observations on the bill and its current iteration in any case. So hopefully you'll be able to come back on Wednesday and share those observations with us. I'm sorry that we ran over, but sometimes these things are hard to squeeze in. So if there are no further questions or observations at this time, the meeting is adjourned.